Welcome to the Deferred Action Podcast. It's been 8 years since former President Obama announced Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, also known as DACA, a United States immigration policy that allows some individuals with unlawful presence in the United States to receive a period of deferred action from deportation and become eligible for work permit in the U.S. The purpose of the podcast is to showcase DACA excellence by interviewing DACA recipients here in America. This is a perfect platform for us, the Dreamers, to share our stories of success, our contribution to this country, and our unique American experience. I'm one of your hosts, Hugo Lagarda.
Hi, I'm Dana, and I'm happy to be co-hosting this podcast with Hugo. We are so proud to be able to showcase these stories in the form of a podcast. It's time for us to speak up about our unique American experience. We hope that this podcast helps to shape the national discourse on DACA in order to humanize the topic. With that said, today's episode is our first of many. Hugo and I will be having a conversation between ourselves to properly introduce the two hosts of the show. With that, Hugo, I am so glad that you brought me onto this amazing project.
Of course. And I am glad that, you know, one day I was scrolling on LinkedIn and you know, I saw a young lady post something really brave, you know, and I think, Dana, when I saw the post, you said three things. You know, you said that you paid your way through college. So you announced that you're graduating from the number one entrepreneurship school in the nation, which
yes,
is amazing.
The number one entrepreneurship program in the nation.
Yeah, University of Houston. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
And you also mentioned that, you know, you're a dreamer. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was almost serendipity because when I saw that, I had this weird feeling like, okay, that's the person I need to partner with to get this podcast done.
Yeah, I know. It was crazy. Never in a million years did I think I was going to post something like that on social media. All my friends who know me, they know that I'm, you know, I'm very bubbly and I like to share a lot. But when it comes to this kind of topic, I always kept very personal and I never really wanted to share that information with everybody because I wanted to, you know, be a part of, you know, I didn't want anyone to judge me because of my immigration status. So, you know, I came to terms with it and, you know, I'm very proud of where I came from and how far I've come from like the beginning. So
that's beautiful.
Wrote that. And next thing you know, I had over 1,000 likes and so many shares. I had people messaging me about how inspiring my story was. So that really, you know, I'm glad that I was able to make a difference. And, you know, for the people who are going through the same thing that I went through, you know, it makes them feel like, hey, I'm not alone in this.
And I think you're being wonderfully humble because when I saw the post, you had, 5,000 likes and hundreds of comments. So I guess what was going through your mind when you saw some random kid, Hugo, message you to partner up?
I mean, this whole thing, like, I remember I was talking to one of our WCE mentors, and, you know, she was telling me, you know, you should write a personal statement on LinkedIn. And I wrote it, like, probably took me like 10 minutes. And, you know, I posted without even thinking about it. I was just like, you know what, I'll probably get like a few likes. And next, you know, I wake up the next morning and I had over 1,000 notifications and then so many messages. And then I saw yours was one of the messages that I saw. And it took me a while to reply back because I kid you not, I had over 300 LinkedIn messages.
Wow.
And I remember when I saw your message, you know, it was good to, you know, see the support from someone. And then I started to have a conversation with you and you told me about this amazing project. And this is something that I've always wanted to personally do, but I just didn't even know where to begin. And I thought it was amazing that, you know, you were, you know, thinking about this. And when you showed me like the game plan, I was like, I'm all hands.
Wow. And that just speaks volume to the kind of person you are, you know? And, so I, you know, taking this opportunity to, you know, start from the beginning. You know, when did your family arrive in the U.S.?
So we arrived June of 2000. We came here when I was 5 years old. I don't really, like, if you ask me, like, do you remember coming here? I absolutely, like, don't recall any of that. I just remember, you know, my mom, like, from my mom telling me the stories. I grew up in Cali, Colombia. Both my parents are Colombian. The majority of my family still lives in Colombia. And, you know, we were living a good, you know, a decent life. You know, my parents weren't poor or rich. But, you know, during that time, it was some rough times in Colombia because of, you know, the drug cartel. And, you know, it got to a point, you know, where my dad was kind of feeling a little bit scared for, you know, our safety. And, you know, now he didn't have to think about himself. He also had to think about his wife and his 5-year-old daughter. And at that time, my aunt was living here in the United States. She said, she called my dad and was like, I think you guys just need to come over here and just, you know, take a vacation and go to Disney World. And that's all I remember. I was going to go to Disney World in this big country. And we came here and, you know, even my mom says till this day, she's like, we left saying, you know, goodbye. Like, we'll be back. We're not going to move. Like, it wasn't like a big go away party. We didn't expect to be. My mom was like, I never in a million years would have seen us living here. And we came here and in just less than 6 months when we had our visas, my parents fell in love with this country and they said, you know what, we see so much potential. And, you know, they weren't thinking about themselves. They've already lived their life. They were thinking about, you know, my future. And that was like our whole journey of coming here. We didn't, you know, cross the border. We went to the U.S. Embassy in Colombia. We got our visas and we flew on an airplane. We got here like normal people. And we overstayed our visas.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I guess one question I have, because that mm-hmm. experience you just described is definitely unique to DACA recipients, but common among DACA recipients, the decision of the parents to stay or go or mm-hmm. be back home. So it sounds like your parents' decision was really, you know, purposeful when they arrived here. They fell in love. Do you remember, have you ever had the conversation with your parents on why they stayed, why they decided to stay?
Because, you know, at one point, like, I was kind of upset at my parents, you know, because my parents are, like, if you know them, they're very hardworking. They do everything by the law. And, you know, I was like, you know, when we were going through this whole process and, you know, it was taking forever for us to get our papers, you know, I was like, well, why couldn't y'all just do it the right way? Just like any other people would always say, like, why didn't they do it the right way? And, you know, I did held a little bit of resentment towards them for a while. But I understood that the circumstances that we were in the beginning, you know, were different. So, you know, my parents weren't thinking about, like, how much money they were going to make here, you know, all the possible, they were just thinking, okay, you know, this is a great opportunity for Dana to learn a second language, to, you know, have a better education. You know, sadly in our countries, you know, they don't have a great education unless if, you know, you come from a, like, a rich family and you're going to, like, a private school. And we don't have that many resources. So they thought about, you know, over here, she's getting, you know, so much help. She's already, like, I picked up English in, like, less than 2 months. And so they were seeing, like, the all the possibilities. So, I mean, I did have the conversation with them and I was like, why didn't you guys do it the right way? And they're like, because, you know, we were so in love with this country and we just kept thinking about your future. And then, you know, as soon as we decided that we were going to stay, we spoke to a lawyer. Okay, so what do we do now? You know, we've obviously overstayed our visa for a month longer than we were supposed to be here. And, you know, they went through all the options. And, you know, back then in 2000, it was fairly easy to, you know, get sponsored if you were working at my dad had a good connection. You know, he got a job. And, you know, his boss loved him and he was like, you know, I'm willing to sponsor you. It was really easy. So we were going to do that. and my aunt was going to sponsor us, petition for us. And it was, you know, they told us, oh, this shouldn't take more than a year. After this, you guys are going to have everything ready to go to become American residents. And then 9/11 happened. And that was like the whole immigration system changed completely. And, you know, it used to be so easy. People would go into a U.S. embassy and come out with a green card in less than a week. And after, you know, 9/11 happened, obviously the laws definitely changed for, you know, good. But, you know, it put our process that we were wanting to go to a lot longer than it was supposed to take.
And that's what led to you becoming a DACA recipient, right?
Yes. So, I mean, I never really, I would want to say, like, you know, I never really understood that I was an immigrant. I think it finally hit me when I was in middle school.
Okay.
And I just started seeing, like, you know, hearing all my friends talk. I'd be like, oh, what college are you going to? And, you know, like, you know, we started getting into, like, the subject of, you know, like, applying to colleges and, like, our future. And, you know, when I looked at the applications, there were some questions that I had. I was like, I'm like, I know what a Social Security is, but I'm like, do I have it?
The dreaded Social Security.
Yeah.
Number. That's
it was like, do I have one? Or and then I remember, like, talking to my parents, like, hey, do we have a Social Security? Like, I've always known that I wasn't born here. You know, my parents definitely, like, you know, they wanted also for me to maintain my, you know, Colombian culture. And I'm very happy that they did that because, you know, I'm very proud to say that I'm from Colombia. Like, every single time someone meets me, I'm like, they always know me, like, hi, I'm Dana and I'm from Colombia. I'm from Cali, Colombia. And so that's my phrase. So I'm very proud that they kept, you know, that Colombian culture within me. And, you know, but there was that time where I was like, am I American or am I Colombian?
Wow.
You know, and it's like, yeah. I kept thinking, I was like, I feel like I'm American because, you know, I don't even remember Colombia.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything about it because I was so young when I left. But I was like, but why? Like, why don't I have the same rights as the girl who's sitting next to me applying to the same college? And yet, you know, we're both the exact same. We both have the same grades. We both want, you know, to major in business. But why is she more American than I am when we both know the same language?
No, definitely. I've always had this inner sense that I've always been a tourist. You know, that's how I think about it. I've always been a tourist to this country. And there's always been this sense, like, at least in my soul, that, like, man, I belong maybe somewhere else. But I, you know, it'd been so long since I've gone to Chihuahua and known where I'm from that I've always felt like I was in between two worlds, you know? And I think that we're going to learn through these interviews that that's also a really cool characteristic of DACA recipients, that almost that outsider perspective. It gives you power.
Yeah.
You know, did you notice that growing up, that outsider perspective, being able to remove yourself because you're an immigrant, you know, you're not like everyone else. That's just American.
At first I hated saying that I was an immigrant.
Ooh, okay.
Like, I was embarrassed because I grew up in a, you know, when we, you know, I lived all over Houston when we first got here. We moved from apartment to apartment. And then I remember going into middle school, sixth grade year, I told my parents, we are not leaving this house. Like, I've been through so many elementary schools. I've lost all my friends. Like, we're staying here forever.
Where did you settle?
We settled in the Spring area. So it's, you know, Houston is so big. So it's a little bit outside of Houston.
Suburbs.
Yeah, it's more of suburbs. We're like in the Spring in the Woodlands area. And so I told my parents, I'm like, we're not leaving anywhere. I don't want to, like, I hate trying, you know, I hate making friends and then having to make new friends again because I'm moving from school to school.
You know, funny enough, like, just not to cut you off, but like, being, since we met, the funny thing, again, the serendipity of it all, it's like, you went to Klein Collins High School.
Yes.
I went to Klein High School.
What a small world.
Small world. And we're both familiar with that area because it's It's an affluent area mm-hmm. with pockets of, you know, immigrants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think what you're getting to is that, you know, we were already even more of an outsider there than
yeah.
than we would have been like in a more Latin affluent yeah. area, right?
No, and I definitely experienced that because when I was in elementary and other different schools, it was, you know, Houston ISD where there was more, you know, you would see more Latinos, you would see more races.
Yeah.
And when I got to, you know, the Klein District, it was so funny because it's like you look at all my homecoming pictures and all my pictures of my friends and you just see like blonde. And there's like this little short Latina girl. That was me. So, you know, I grew up in a place where, you know, I was the minority. You know, I, you know, through my whole like, you know, elementary experience, I wasn't the minority. I had friends who spoke Spanish and, you know, their parents, you know, spoke Spanish. Some of them were in the same situation as I was. But when I moved to, you know, this district, I felt like I was an outsider. Mm. And, you know, this was like, I think it definitely like it hit me, like the culture hit me hard. And so it took me a while to adjust. But, you know, I adjusted and, you know, I was embarrassed to say, you know, I'm an immigrant. And I think till this day, you know, I think like only like two or three of my people found out that I, you know, I'm not from here, that I'm illegal. You know, people knew that I was from Colombia, but they thought, you know, that I had papers. And, you know, because I didn't want them to look at me.
You had your select group.
Yeah. I'm like, I didn't want, you know, my friends to be like, you know, and some of them, you know, they were, you know, some parents were talk bad about, you know, illegals.
Yeah.
And it's like you would go to their house and you're eating dinner and they're having like this political conversations and you're just like, oh my gosh, like they don't even know I'm legal.
You know what's funny? I had that same exact experience mm-hmm. many times in many homes.
Mm-hmm.
And I like grew to learn the party lines on both sides.
Yeah.
And so that way, you know, whenever I was being asked, you know, what are your thoughts on immigration in America? Mm-hmm. Like, I could kind of navigate that conversation to make sure that it doesn't expose me,
yeah.
you know? And I guess, so at elementary school, I was still in Klein. So I didn't get the chance to live amongst around. Latinos.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing I did notice from that experience was how hard it was to break into the, you know, white American circles.
Mm-hmm.
And so what tool or activity helped you break in to be a cool small Latina girl?
I think it's my personality.
Okay.
I'm very friendly. I'm very outspoken. I have a bubbly personality. So I'm not afraid to, you know, go out and make new friends or say hi to someone. Like I could talk for days. I could talk to a tree.
Who was your first friend?
Oh gosh. In sixth grade, my, you know, to this day, like I still call her my best friend. She's probably like the only
wow.
people that I talk to, you know, from high school. Cause other than that, I don't talk to anybody, but her name is Erica Seabrook.
Nice. Shout out to Erica.
Shout out to Erica. That's my girl. But yeah, we were best friends. Like we clicked in sixth grade and, you know, even till this day now, like we're both 25 and we're, you know, we still, you know, talk. And so yeah, that was like my go-to person.
That's amazing. My first best friend was this gentleman named Tim Gibbs.
Mm-hmm.
I've known him for over 20 years. He was one of the groomsmen at my wedding. He would have been the best man, but my brother Lewis was the best man.
Oh.
And I remember I met Tim. Tim was, his parents were going through a rough time and
yeah.
it was New Year's and you know, my family's out popping fireworks
yeah.
and I just saw this kid on the stairs kind of just watching us.
Mm.
And same as you, Dana, you know, I've always been friendly. I've always been, you know, open to new friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went over there and I asked him, hey, do you want to come hang out with us and pop fireworks
mm-hmm.
with us? Even though I didn't know him. And that has blossomed into one of the best relationships I could have ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to know that, you know, we both are friendly people.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that definitely has helped us, you know, during like those hard years. Cause I mean, like I'm not going to be, I mean, we're talking about middle school and high school, like you don't even know who you are. So
the
you're
kids
trying
are
to,
savages.
Yeah, you're trying to fit in with like all these inner circles. So, you know, it's, sometimes it's hard. I remember, you know, coming and, you know, all the Latinas would be like, why are you friends with them?
Yeah.
And I'm like they talk bad about, you know, who we are. And like they think we're all illegals and they think we're all Mexican because we're, you know, we have dark hair and dark skin.
Yeah.
And we speak Spanish. And I was like, well, you know, maybe I can be that one difference that can change their mind and their opinion about, you know, who we are. And it took me, like, I'm going to be honest, like, it took me a long time. I think, like, almost, like, my junior year of high school to, you know, finally be able to, you know, stand up. And, you know, if someone said, like, something mean or something rude, you know, I'd be like, you know, that's, I'm like, do you even know my
that's
story?
Not right.
If you don't know my story,
aren't
then
we friends?
Exactly.
And I agree. I had this inflection point mm-hmm. really early on in my life. So I entered kindergarten after going through kindergarten in Mexico. So I knew the ABCs, but in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a little bit of an advantage. And, you know, back in the day, they would separate the Hispanic kids into these English as a second language classes so that you can accelerate your English and you can catch up with the other students. And I was really fortunate to grasp English quickly. And I remember being separated at that point from the rest of the Latino kids in my community. And I remember that being a really interesting infliction point because the other kids, they went on to be almost separate from the like white Americans, the more affluent citizens. Mm-hmm. And I never got a chance again to be a part of that circle. And a part of me regrets that because had I, just like you just said, had I matured earlier, I would have been able to help integrate them
yeah.
and help them, you know, live, you know, with more friends, et cetera. You know, not, I mean, not that they didn't enjoy their lives, but
yeah.
I mean, I've seen some of the paths that they've gone down and I just, you know, it was just that part of my life where I just kind of got put into those circles, you know? So it is interesting how when you realize to be proud of who you are,
yeah,
you know?
It's like your parents have come so far and they've sacrificed so much, you know, for, I think it's, you know, a shame to be, you know, like not proud of like where you're from. And I mean, I understand kids who, you know, are young and are probably like, oh, like, I don't want to be judged.
Right.
But I think now and like, I think back then it was a lot harder because
right.
I feel like back then we, you know, immigration, you know, not many people knew all the facts about immigration. They think
for
they
sure.
would know everything about it, but in reality, they didn't really know. And I feel like now we're in a, you know, in like a year where it's, you know, immigration is a topic that is talked about 24/7.
Yeah.
And I feel like more people are starting to understand a little bit better of, you know, it's not like, you know, you don't just come to this country and like on the snap of your fingers, get everything fixed. Like it's a process. It took me personally 20 years.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, you know, it's super easy. Like you guys should have done it the right way. And I was like, we did do it the right way. And it
That's
took
right.
us 20 years to
the
get our papers.
Broken.
The system is completely broken. And I don't think many people really understand that. And I think they judge
yeah.
before they even like know our story. So they
That's
think
right.
this is the perfect platform to be able to, you know, express what, you know, what we've been through and, you know, what not only just us two, but thousands and hundreds of students and, you know, are going through right now.
Yeah. That's why what you did on LinkedIn was so brave. A secret for you right now
yeah.
is that I actually haven't told many people that mm-hmm. I'm a DACA recipient, you know? And so I'm excited. Like once we announce this podcast, it's kind of going to be like my, almost like my coming out party,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, it really is.
It's going to be crazy. The really unique part about you, Dana, is that, you know, you've found a loophole in the system.
Mm-hmm.
You figured out a way to get your residency. So I wanted to ask you to please talk
oh
about
gosh.
That.
I wish I would say I was the one who found the loophole, but I didn't. It was our lawyers.
Who's the lawyer to shout them out?
Martha Rodriguez.
Martha Rodriguez. Here in Houston?
Yes. Okay. I hope. Yeah. She is with, oh my gosh. We will link down their information. Yes. And hopefully I can talk to them. They can probably be on this podcast and, you know, help us. Because I feel like the opportunity that I received was, I mean, I'm sitting here and I feel people are like, you got lucky. And I'm like, no, that was not luck. That was definitely a blessing.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, we were like I was saying in the beginning, you know, my aunt petitioned for, you know, my family. But, you know, 9/11 happened and we submitted our papers, you know, like right before it happened, and like that, you know, messed everything up and it made the process even longer. You know, I remember going to the lawyer's office and they were like, by 5 to 10 years, you should be becoming residents. And it's like every single time we would go, they would just extend it more. Oh, like it was like this waiting list that was like 1,000 pages long.
Oh my God.
So it was definitely, you know, it was like, we couldn't do anything much, like, but just wait. And, you know, for me, like, I was never scared for me personally, because I'm like, I'm a student, you know, I'm in high school. Like,
yeah.
I didn't do anything bad, you know, so I'm like, I feel like I'm good. But for me, my thing was like, oh my gosh, my parents, like, I'm so scared for them, you know, like, they are driving, you know, they have jobs, like, what if they get pulled over and all this stuff? So that was more of my fear. But 20 years later, I'm 25 now. Hmm. And I remember my parents went to go visit our lawyer, and I think I was like 22 or 23. And they were talking about, like, you know, okay, where are we now in the process? Like, we've been waiting for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our lawyer was like, okay, like, you guys are, you know, my parents are on track. But she was like, I do have some bad news. Unfortunately, Dana is out of the petition, because once you turn 21, you're not, like, you're considered an adult. So mm-hmm. she was like, she's out of the petition. There's nothing we can do for her. She only has two options. And my dad was like, okay, what are the options? And she was like, either she marries someone that's an American citizen, or she waits on to see if the government or the president decides to make DACA recipients, you know, residents, and then pathway to citizenship.
Wait, just as a fun tangent.
Yeah.
Have you ever, like, been in the process of marrying someone for American citizenship?
No, I don't. I mean, there's times where you think about it, but at the same time, it's like, you're just like, I don't want to, like, that's something that I didn't think was a right way to do. So yeah. I was just like, you know, and then I'm a very independent person. So, you know, I remember when, you know, the lawyer told us that, I was like, great, I have to depend on two idiots. So it's like, I don't want to depend on a guy, and I don't want to depend on the government, or let alone the president.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is not a good option for me. Like, I don't like these two options. And when I don't like something, I'm going to try to find a way to, you know, make something happen, because it's like, I'm like, I'm not accepting those options.
Right.
I think it, you know, it definitely hurt my parents the most, because they were, you know, they just wanted me to get my stuff. They're like, you know, we're old. Like, they wanted me there. My dad always jokes around. He was like, I need her to get her papers first, because I need her. She's very successful, and I need her to work so that we can retire and she can pay for us. So, you know, it was hard on all of us. But, you know, I was just like, you know, I was thankful that I still had I had DACA. So I was able to, you know, work, continue going to school. And I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to have to, you can't sit and cry and bitch and complain. Like, you just have to suck it up and keep going with your life. And that's exactly what I did. And I'm like, if, you know, it's in God's time, you know, whenever he wants me to become a resident, it'll be his time. So I was like, you know, I'm leaving this all on God's hand. And next thing you know, I'm applying for the Wolf Center for Entrepreneurship, which is, you know, it's the number one program in the nation.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I was going to the University of Houston, and I was planning to major in entrepreneurship, and human resources for this entrepreneurship program specifically. In order for you to get in, you have to submit a application video. You know, it's a very competitive program. You know, they only allow around 36 to 38 students to come into the program. It's the only program in Bauer, the Bauer Business Program, that you actually have to apply to be able to graduate.
Right.
So, you know, it's competitive, and, you know, I like a challenge. So I was like, okay, we have to submit an essay, a video. We had to do personal interviews. So I was like, okay, I got this. You know, I did my video, and, you know, I wanted to showcase who I really was. I wanted to be as authentic. And that was actually the first time that I, like you were saying, like a coming out party. That was like my first time that I said in the video, I'm a dreamer. Wow. I didn't say I'm a DACA recipient, you know, because I felt like I don't want to get too, I'm going to let people like watch this video and say, okay, like, is she referring to like, oh, she like dreams a lot, or, oh, she's a dreamer.
We dream a lot.
I mean, to be honest, like, I always thought that name was so cheesy.
It's so cliche.
It really is. So I was just like, you know what? I'm going to say I'm a dreamer. And some of my friends got it. And some of my friends still were
clueless.
Like, oh, she just likes to dream.
entrepreneur, dreamer.
So I, you know, I officially announced in that video, and, you know, that video, it did get a lot of views. And I remember, you know, when I was in my interview with the program director, Dave Cook, you know, he was interviewing me to see if I was qualified to be in this program. That was the first thing he asked me. He was like, so you're not from here, right? And I was like, nope. And he was like, so what are you going to do if you get deported? That was like the first question he asked me. And I was just like, oh, my gosh. Like, I'm like, I was not expecting this. And I was like, well, if I get deported, then I get deported. I mean, there's nothing else I can do. And he was like, what if you get deported while you're in school? Like, what are you going to do? And I was like, well, if it happens, it happens. And I'm like, if you want to help me out, you're more than welcome to help me out.
You know, that's an interesting, you know why that's an interesting question from him?
Mm-hmm.
Because in the entrepreneurial quest, you almost have to take the same kind of risk.
Yeah. It's all about risk.
You know?
Yeah.
It's all about calculating risk.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, everyone who knows Dave Cook, they know that's the typical question. He's very blunt. He always says it like it is. So when he asked me that question, I was just like, oh my gosh. And so, I mean, after that, you know, I submitted the video. My lawyers, till this day, like, I still don't even know how they, you know, saw the video.
Yeah.
But one of them saw the video, and they were just like, you know, they were like, we were all crying when we saw this video. It was like, you know, it touched us. Like,
wow.
It inspired us to help you out even more, because we're like, this girl deserves to be in this country. This girl is doing so much for this country already. Like, she does not deserve to go back to a place that she doesn't even know. So, you know, they investigated, and they basically found like a loophole. Where I'm going to sum it up really quick. We'll do a podcast with the actual lawyers, because I'm like, sometimes I don't want to like say something then, because I'm not a lawyer. So,
right.
But long story short, you know, they were able to find, you know, that when I got here, I was, you know, I came here through a visa.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I came here legal.
Right.
And, you know, when my aunt petitioned for us, you know, we were covered under that petition. I received DACA December 2012 when I was 17. My birthday's in January 27th. So I think it was like, I want to say it was like 45 days before I turned 18. And so technically when I received DACA, I was still considered a minor because I wasn't 18. And then I got DACA, you know, at the age of 17. So technically, the way that they fought it is saying that I've never been here illegally. I've always been protected by something. I've always had the right to be here and the right to work and the right to do this and that.
Mm.
So they were able to fight that with immigration.
So the 21 and older rule didn't apply to you.
Yeah, exactly. Because technically, like, you know, even after when I got my DACA when I was 17, and, you know, now I'm 25. So I've had the right to be here. So.
And now shout out to Mr. Cook. You got your degree.
Yeah, now I have my,
the risk was worth it.
Exactly. I recently just graduated. And it's so funny because it's like, I got this, all this happened in November of 2019. November of 2018. And, you know, we didn't think, you know, immigration is so slow. We were like, this might take a year. Like, I don't know how long this is going to take, but surprisingly, they were really quick with everything. And in January of 2019, we received a letter from immigration saying that they approved my my case and my dad's case. So we they were like, whenever we call you, like, you're going to have to come down to Colombia and, you know, have like talk to the U.S. Embassy in Colombia. And from there on, you can get your USA residency. Wow. It was a risk. There we go. That's another risk that we were taking, you know,
our
especially
lives are all about risks.
Like, I was like freaking out. I was like, oh my gosh, like, what if we go, like, it's like, we all know, like, once you're here and you leave the US, you can't come back. So
yeah,
that was a risk. And I remember asking the lawyer, like, I was like, what's the probability of me not coming back to the US? And she was like, well, the good thing is that, you know,
well, the good thing
you
is
and your dad, you know, you both have been, you know, good, you know, like, you guys haven't gotten in trouble. You know, you've been both of you have been paying your taxes. You have contributed a lot to the country.
Yeah.
So there's no way they're going to, like, she was like, I would not be sending you there if you didn't have a good case.
Right.
So, you know, and the next, you know, in February, we got a letter from the U.S. Embassy in Bogota, Colombia, saying that they wanted us there. And we had our date, like our interview with them on April 7th. And yeah, so I had to leave during the first semester of, you know, being in the Wolf program. You know, thankfully I had the support of all my classmates, the program directors, you know, all my professors. They understood that, you know, this was something that was going to change my life. And they said was, I remember when I told Dave, I was like, came into his office and I was like, remember when you asked me, what am I going to do if I get deported? Well, something like this is kind of happening, but it's going to be for the good. And he was like, what's going on? And I told him everything. And he was just like, and I remember he was like, you need to tell your classmates. And I was like, wow. I don't. And this was the first, like, our class was a total of 36. And he was like, you need to go up there and tell them, like, what's going on. And I was just like, I don't barely even know any of these people. I was like, if heavy. I didn't even tell any of my best friends, how do you expect me to stand up in here and tell a classroom about my story?
Right.
And he made me do it. And I got up and I told him, and I, you know, it was something that was hard at first, but I was able to get that off my chest. And
how did you do it?
That's a good question. I mean, I was given no choice. He was like, you have to go up them. So
yeah,
I went up there and I told them, and, you know, I did feel like after, I felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. Because
so was it in, so, okay. So you talked to him. Was it that same day? Like,
yeah, literally. Like, I remember right then and there. I came in, I drove to school early that morning because I messaged him and I was like, I need to talk to you, but I need to talk to you in person. And I talked to him like in the morning, and then he was like, okay, well, during my class, I want you to stand up and share your story. And I'm like, I don't even, it was like the second week of school. And I was like, I don't know who these people are. I mean, now I love all of them and like, we're all like a family. But I was like, at that time, it's like, I don't know these people. Like, why do they want to hear my sad, sappy story about immigration if they don't even know who I am? But
how,
you
many,
know,
like 30 people, 35 people, right?
Yeah, we're a total of, including me, 36. Okay. So it was like, I was telling my story to complete, like 35 strangers. Complete strangers. And, but, you know, I'm glad I did it because it was, you know, when I was leaving to Colombia on the last week that I was here, my classmates, they gave me this American flag, which I feel like this will be like this is one of my favorite moments that I will always remember and take in my heart. They all surprised me with an American flag and they all signed it. And I mean, like, it makes me even like want to cry right now just because I was not expecting that. And so, you know, to have their support meant a lot. And, you know, not just their support, I had so many people supporting me throughout this whole thing. And long story short, we went to Colombia. We got to Colombia March 29th of 2019, and it had been exactly 19 years since I had been back to my country.
19 years
since I've seen my family, 19 years since I've I'm like, I mean, this was like I was visiting Colombia for the very first time. So it was definitely like, oh my gosh. And I was there for a month while everything got situated. And we came back, and now I'm happy to say I'm a USA resident. I just, in April, it was like a 1 year anniversary.
Yeah.
And so now we have to wait 4 more years and we become citizens.
That's beautiful. And wow, the flag story is amazing.
Yeah, I still have the flag. Like, I have it hanging. It's always going to be a really great memory.
That's great, Dana. And so, you know, I've always felt like a tourist. And I feel like there's going to be this moment when I get to go back to Chihuahua where I'll get to know that part of me that I was missing. Yeah. So, you know.
You haven't been back, right?
I haven't been back.
How long has it been?
I'm 26, so it's been almost 19 years.
Wow, yeah, the same, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you got that unique experience. What was it like going back to your country, to your native country?
I mean, I was excited that I was going to be able to see my family. You know, my parents, like I was saying in the beginning, my parents did an amazing job of, you know, keeping, like, making sure that I didn't lose my Spanish.
Yeah.
Making sure that I, you know, knew who my family was. You know, we would always, like, FaceTime. So, I would recognize them. I just hadn't, like, I haven't seen them, like, face to face. And, you know, it was amazing just to, you know, be able to hug my aunts. I have a lot of family down there, my cousins. So it was a very special moment to, you know.
Do you have a favorite family member?
I do.
Who is it?
Ooh,
I mean, if you don't mind.
My tia Gloria.
Tia Gloria.
She's like we call her mama, because she's literally like, I feel like she's me.
She's like you, but older.
Yeah. We're like identical, like we're the same, like everything that I'm like when I was hanging out with her, it's like the way that she dresses, the way that she talks, the way that she is. I was like, oh my gosh, she's totally me.
Wow.
So I love her to death. But they're all my favorites. I love every single one equally. But yeah, it was amazing just to see my family again. But you know, at first it was a culture shock. Because, you know, I'm not used to the way that they drive down there. That was one thing that scared me to death. They're driving over there in Colombia. It's not organized. Like over here, you know, people respect a stop sign. People respect the red lights. You know, people turn on their blinkers. Mm-hmm. Over there, they don't they just don't care. And it's it's like every car, there's like three lanes and you see like five cars and like all over, it's just all over the place. And I think that I was like, oh my gosh. And that's when I learned, it's like, I was thinking back to when I had a conversation with my mom and she was like, okay, like what if we do have to go back to Colombia?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, we'll go back. Like, it's no problem. Like I can live a good life in Colombia. Like, I can't wait to travel. But I was thinking it as a tourist. Right. I wasn't thinking it as like, oh my gosh, like I'm physically going to be living there, because, you know, you when you see it, when you hear and you see about your country, you hear all these amazing places to go, all this amazing food and all this fun stuff. But when it comes to like living, you know, I wasn't really thinking about that. And I looked around and I was like, I love my country. I'm happy where I'm come from. But being there for a month, I was like, I'm ready to go back home. And to me, home was Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I realized that, you know, I can definitely like come to Colombia to vacation, to stay here.
And you'll always be in your heart, right?
Yeah. Always be in my heart. Like I said in the beginning, when people ask me, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from Colombia. I say it loud and proud. But to me, that's not my home. My home is here. I don't see myself living there.
Yeah.
And it's not because I don't like my country, but it's because, you know, I've grown, this is all I've known. You know, I was born there, but this is, you know, Houston, Texas is where I've been living here for the past 20 years. So this is, I'm already like used to like, you know, like the way that they drive here, I'm used to their system, and you know, it's completely different.
There's a lot of things, I guess, we take for granted living here in America, you know?
We really do. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's beautiful.
I'm like, I said, I will never complain about traffic ever again, even in Houston traffic, you guys. Yeah. I'm being serious. Like, when I was in Bogota, Colombia, like, I would always hear my cousins, they're like, oh my gosh, this traffic is so bad. And I would just be like, oh, wait, you like, hello, like, have you ever been to Houston? It's like the worst. And I was, when I got back home, I was like, I'm never complaining about Houston traffic ever again, because I would prefer this Houston traffic more than the traffic in Colombia, because I thought I was going to like have a heart attack despite the way that people were driving down there.
Wow. Wow. That's great. Well, I'm really happy for you that you got to experience Colombia again.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. I was going to go back to high school, mm-hmm. and you know, one thing I wanted to ask you, do you remember the moment when Obama announced DACA? Like, do you remember like where you were, what you felt, you know?
I remember, I think I wasn't at home. I remember the first person that told me was my mom. She called me and she was like freaking out.
Oh wow.
I remember she was like, oh my gosh, you're gonna be able to drive. That's all I remember hearing her say, because at that moment, like, I couldn't, you know, get a license. I couldn't get my driver's license because I didn't have, you know, a social security number, and my parents didn't have one either. So, you know, that sucked. You're an 18-year-old who has to be asking for rides. That was very...
So you never drove illegally with no license?
I mean, I drove illegally, but...
I had to.
Yeah, we've all done it. But, you know, my mom did not like that. So,
right.
You know, when... I remember my mom called me and she was like freaking out. She was like, guess what? You're going to be able to get your license right before your birthday. And I was just like, they did. Because, you know, I remember hearing like, you know, President Obama is, you know, working to, you know, help the children who came here at a young age without knowing that they were going to stay here. And, you know,
it was a surprise. He kind of dropped the mic.
Yeah. You hear all this stuff and you're just like, okay, but like, where's the action? And, you know, once they made it official, I was just like, oh my gosh, like, I have to get on this ASAP. Like, I have to get this work permit. Like, now, you know, I was about to graduate high school and I'm like, I need to start applying for college. I'm like, I haven't done that because I've been putting it off. Cause it's just, I was scared.
Well, so, okay. Cause this was a huge dilemma in my life too.
Yeah.
Like so I woke up that day. It was a Monday, cause mm-hmm. I know that because I was doing research before we talked.
Yeah.
And, when I woke up, my mom was crying and mm-hmm. she was watching, you know, Obama on the screen. And back then I wasn't even socially conscious. Like I didn't know about politics.
Same.
I didn't care about politics, frankly.
You think you would know something, but you really didn't.
No, I didn't even know how to react, because for the longest time at that time, I was trying to figure out where to go to school, and mm-hmm. I was really upset about it.
Yeah,
same. I was like, man, like I can't get any of the scholarships my friends are getting, even though I have just as good of grades.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I can't play soccer in college because there's very limited options. And so my plan then was to go back to Chihuahua. Like I was going to go study at Chihuahua's like state school.
Yeah.
And I was really I was telling all my friends like, hey, you know, I'm probably going to go back to Mexico. It is what it is. What were you telling your friends?
And now that it's funny that you bring that up, because I had two friends who, you know, they were older than I was. So they had already graduated high school, and they were like, we can't do this anymore. Like, I can't get a job. Like, you know, I'm working and I'm getting like, you know, I'm working, but I'm getting paid like under the table and it's not good. Like, I can't even support myself to be able to pay myself through college. You know, I'm having to pay like out of state tuition, even though I've lived here for years. So, you know, those two friends, they were actually from Mexico and they got tired of it and they went back to Mexico.
Wow.
And then 6 months later, like this whole big thing dropped. So I was just like, oh my gosh, like it sucked that, you know, the timing, but you know, I mean, that just like brought my, like, I feel really bad because it's like, if it would have stayed 6 months, you know,
I think a lot of people went through that.
And it's like, everyone went through, even like I had, like, I was like, I'll just go back to Colombia. Like, if I can't live my life here to the fullest, then I can do it in Colombia. You know, if they don't want me in this country, then I can just go back to my country and, you know, try to make my country better. But like I was saying, like, it's, you know, you think you know how it is to live in a different place, and then you actually go there and you're like, it is a culture shock. Even if you're from there, it's still a culture shock because you haven't been living there, you know?
That's right.
So, I mean, it did like come through our, like my parents, I remember my dad saying like, let's go to Canada. Canada, you know, they're accepting, you know, Canada's big about, you know, helping out immigrants. And you know, for the longest time, he was like, let's go to Canada. And I was just like, I'm not going to Canada. Like, I hate the cold. And it's really funny that I actually just, you know, the first place that I visit outside of Colombia before I got, when I got my residency, was Canada. And I absolutely fell in love with it. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. And
in a different universe, there's a Canadian Dana.
Yeah, somewhere out there. But I mean, like my dad was like all about like, let's go to Canada. Like, you know, they don't want us here in this country.
Yeah.
I know someone that went to Canada and, you know, was working there, and now they're, you know, they're sponsoring them to, you know, become a Canadian citizen.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the longest time I was going back to Canada, and it was funny because I was like, why don't we just go back to Colombia? Like, that's where we're from. That's what we know. And I'm like, that's what you know.
Right.
But my dad was just like, no, like, I want to go to Canada. And, you know, I remember asking him, like, why? Like, why would you choose Canada over your home country? And he was like, because I know I have more. Even he was like, at my age, I have more opportunities going to Canada than I will ever have any opportunities going back to Colombia.
Wow.
He was like, I mean, like, you, like, I wouldn't be, like, too scared of you, like, finding an opportunity in Colombia because you know English very well.
Right.
You know, you're young. But me, basically, like, after you're like 40, your career is done over there. And I mean, unless if like you have like a, like a, if you find a really good job in the beginning, or if you have your own business and it's going well. But my dad was like, I would have more opportunity in another country than in my home country.
What has been the evolution of your parents' work life in the U.S.? Like, what did your parents start doing and what are they doing now?
My dad, he, you know, he went to school, he, graduated college in Colombia. You know, he was always big on education, and, my mom, she was, I think she did, I can't remember. I think she did like some courses in college, probably like, kind of like community college would be over here. Like, probably got her associates, but over there it's a little bit different. So, you know, my parents were, you know, like, they went to college, they, you know, their parents supported them, you know, going to college. You know, and my dad came here and he started working in construction. He's always wanted to be like, you know, he loves designing and building, and he's a handyman. Like, he does everything in our house. So he saw an opportunity to do that, and he started building clients, and, you know, and he saw that it was like, you know, people were paying him, you know, good.
For sure.
And, you know, that was like what he did. I mean, that's what he still does till now. I mean, he has his, like, I'm happy to say that my dad, the first thing after he got his residency, you know, I asked him, I was like, so what are you going to do? You know, my thing was that he's probably going to go to Canada. That was like the first thing because he's always wanted to visit Canada.
Hang out with Drake.
Yeah, hang out with Drake. But he was just like, no, I want to start my business. He was like, I want to make my business official, like, legit.
That's beautiful.
And he did that.
So there's entrepreneurship in your blood.
Yeah, he did that. Yeah. And that was the first thing he did. He made his business official. And, you know, now he's, you know, doing his own thing. And he loves it. My mom has always been, you know, kind of like the stay-at-home mom. That's what I'm saying. Like, we were always very blessed that my mom was always at home.
Yeah.
She didn't really need to get a job. Mm-hmm. So she was always there. But I think my mom also sacrificed that too, because she wanted to make sure that me and my sister, because I have another sister who was actually born here in the U.S. So she's a U.S. citizen. So she wanted us to maintain like our Spanish and our culture. She would always have the rule, like, you can talk English all you want outside of the house, but when you come to this house, it's Spanish.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have children that don't know how to say hi to the grandma in Spanish.
Yeah, for so sure. What's to have my mom, and I actually had a so I have a lot of Colombian influence in me, Dana, because my babysitter growing up was Colombian, like an older Colombian lady. Her name is Doña Mari.
Doña
Maribel. Doña Maribel taught me everything about being a gentleman, Colombian style.
Oh yeah.
You walk in the room, say hello to everyone.
Everybody, yeah.
Say hello to everyone, starting with the oldest person.
Even if you don't like them.
Hola, ¿cómo estás? ¿Cómo está tu día? You know, and you know, so that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. My parents, my dad actually, the funny story he told me was he started out at Burger King. He was learning how to flip burgers at Burger King, and he burnt the burger. He got fired.
Oh my gosh.
And that for so to backtrack, you know, similar to your dad, he actually was an accountant in Mexico.
Okay.
And so it's kind of crazy, like, how much they're willing to sacrifice.
Yeah,
you know,
they
to
had
go
a
from
whole career.
A whole career, you know,
degree, and everything, yeah.
Knowledge. And they come here and, you know, they're looked at as if they know nothing at all and they're just labor workers, but they're much more than that, you know. And so my dad, you know, he got into the construction, same thing. And now I'm proud to say, you know, he's a really well-respected man in a construction company. He's a supervisor of a whole couple of teams.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's been amazing to see his transition. My mom's superhuman, you know.
She
took care of.
I think all Latina moms are
all
superheroes.
Latina moms. My mom, first of all, she birthed five boys.
Oh,
I'm the eldest of five boys.
Yeah.
And so my brothers is Luis, who's close to me. He's 24. Mm-hmm. He's DACA as well. Then the youngest three, which is like a 10-year difference in gap, it's Andy, Isaac, and Marcos.
Wow.
And so they were all U.S. citizens.
Oh, my goodness.
And my mom had to take care of all of them.
Yeah.
And on top of that, even though we told her, you don't have to work, you know, she still went and cleaned houses.
Yeah, same.
You know, still went and got the little cash that she could.
That's exactly what my mom would do. She would, on like, you know, on Saturdays and Sundays, she would go do her hustles and, you
that's
know,
awesome.
Like started with her friends. Like they would go clean houses.
Yeah.
I remember sometimes I would even go with her and help her out.
That's beautiful.
And, you know, like now she has a passion for kids. She loves kids.
Nice.
And she is a nanny. And she's been nannying for over, oh my gosh, I think she's like I want to say like 15 years now, pretty much since we got here. And it's so funny that I would always think it's kind of ironic and funny at the same time that, you know, all the people that wanted her and requested her were mostly like American couples.
Yeah.
American, you know, these moms are like, you know, fight for her because they're like, we want her to be our nanny. And, you know, some of them were very like against, you know, illegals, but
exactly. They
don't
know.
Over here, you know, my mom is like teaching their children how to speak Spanish.
Cause they're starving for the nurture of a Latina mom.
Yeah. Like, you know? I cannot tell you how many kids my mom has raised, like a lot. She's probably raised like a good 15 kids that are,
wow.
Yeah. Like from babies, like from like newborns to until like they're 8 or 9. That's been like the, right now she's a nanny to two little beautiful kids. So, I mean, she loves them. So, I mean, that's like a little small hustles that, you know, my mom used to do. She used to nanny, like go clean houses. And then she would, you know, raise
and
me. I mean, my mom didn't have that many kids like your mom. Yeah. But, you know, it was like, you know, me and my sister. And
right.
That was always her main goal. Like, you know, make sure that, you know, they're aware of where they come from, that they're proud of where they come from, that they know who their family is and all that stuff.
For sure. You can't stop the moms.
Yep.
The moms are going to hustle no matter what. And
yep, that's true.
On that note, it was really interesting, like growing up and going to, because sometimes I would help my mom clean too, go to these big houses in like super wealthy oil America, you know? And that was my first exposure to like what was possible. You know, I would go into these houses and there'd be a beautiful chandelier, you know, 5 rooms,
yeah,
a beautiful backyard, a pool. And I was just like, wow, how did these people get so much money? You know? And I remember too, like one thing I kind of like, I had this chip on one of the chips on my shoulders is like every spring they would get rid of their clothes. Their clothes were nice. Like we would have one of the kids' names was like Josh or something. So my brother and I would always joke, it's like, oh, here we go, Josh. 2012 collection coming up.
I've been through that too. My mom used to, she used to work, she used to be kind of like a, like clean and also be like a house sitter for one of the, I don't know if you've ever heard of Carlton's Wood. Yeah. It's like this
Carlton
big,
Woods.
Yeah.
I used to help my dad with construction there, and it was on Thursdays. Every Thursday I was like, Dad, I'm working with you in the summer on Thursdays. We go into Carlton Woods.
Yeah, that place, it's, you know, basically we're all, it's in the woodlands. It's like where all the, you know, I think like Rockets players have houses. Oh, Beyonce was constructing a house over there.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Like, yes. These houses are like in the millions to billions. Like, yeah, it's crazy. And I remember my mom used to like clean the house, and it was only like the dad and his daughter. And she wasn't even there half the time because sometimes she would be with her mom. And like, this house had like, I think like 6 rooms, like a big movie theater, huge pool, like 3 kitchens. And my mom was like, literally like, I'm the only one here. And I'm like, she's like, sometimes I don't even like, I've cleaned so much. Like, this house is so clean because no one uses it. And I would also go with her because I'm like when he was like, the guy was away on business trips, like I would go use the pool.
There you go. Same.
Exactly. And yeah. Like, when like they were giving away clothes, like I remember my mom would bring like, you know, nice clothes because it's like they were throwing them away. And my mom was like, oh my gosh, you can't throw this away.
Yeah, exactly.
Either she would give it to us or she would send it to Colombia. So it's like, it's, you know, I think all of us has that one story where it's like, you know, they're all kind of like, we can all relate to that.
For sure. And now I'm happy to say I buy my own clothes.
Yeah. same here.
That's so beautiful. And the other thing I was going to ask you, mm-hmm. when you got DACA, you were able to work. Mm-hmm. What jobs have you been involved in? Like, where have you worked?
I have my first legal job.
Legal job, yeah.
My first legal job was I got a job at the mall.
Yeah.
Classic. You know, I was still in high school. I was finishing off my high school year. I worked at Victoria's Secret.
Oh, cool.
That had been like a dream of mine because I've always heard like, oh, working at Victoria's Secret is like the thing. I worked there. I started off in like regular like cashier.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was with the company for about 3 years, and I, you know, I came from, you know, just being a regular cashier to being promoted to, you know, like an elevated associate, which was like, you know, manager positions.
What? Okay. So that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause every job I've been in, I've always strived to be promoted.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, what did you do even at that lowest level, like of first job? What did you do right?
I mean, I think with all of us, you know, I think with every person that has DACA, I think we appreciate it more, and we don't take a job for, you know, even if it's just working at an HEB, like, you know, I feel like every DACA person that I've met, you know, they've always started at the bottom, but between like 6 months or less, they've always achieved a higher goal. Because I feel like, you know, we don't take this for granted. Like, we know that this is something that was given to us and we need to make the most out of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was my view. Like, I was like, okay, yes, I'm now allowed to work, you know, and I have the same right as everyone in here. But it's up to me if I want to either stay in the same position forever or if I want to keep going and, you know, maybe become like a manager or something like that.
Wow.
So, you know, just, you know, working hard. And I think, you know, people, I would always, you know, I did some internships because I was, you know, my second major was human resources and learning how to hire people. When it comes to hiring, if I would see someone that had DACA, I would personally I know for a fact, I don't even have to read their resume. I know for a fact that just because they have DACA, they're going to be hardworking.
Yeah, right.
It's a given. Yeah. And so I feel like, you know, having DACA and the ability to work, you know, even though I was just working at the mall, you know, I took it very seriously because it's like, you know, I never know when, you know, I've always been wanting this. Now that I have it, I can't make an excuse. I have to go and work and make my own money and, you know, do what's right. And I worked at Victoria's Secret. I worked at Kate Spade. I've worked at an accounting firm as a receptionist. All of this, I've always had like DACA. And at first, it's kind of awkward because it's like when they ask you, can I see like, you know, your work permit?
Yeah, and awkward,
they're like,
yeah.
What is? Everyone is always like, what is this? This is weird.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, it's just, I mean, I'm,
don't
I'm,
worry,
I mean,
it's
I'm
good.
Not, I'm like, I'm not from here. I mean, it's like, it's all like legal. Like,
yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
not giving anything false. I remember so many people would always like, this is a weird little card. Like, what is this? And I'm just like, you know, I'm not from here. I'm like, I wasn't born here. So that's like my, you know, I'm allowed to be here. So this is like my temporary.
Yeah.
And so that's all I would say. I wouldn't go into detail because they're just like, oh, okay.
I mean,
but it's so funny because there was some time they were like, what is this? Like, this is weird.
Yeah.
Like, don't you just give me your soul? And I'm like, no, like, you have to do this and that. And you have to type this number in. So.
Right. Yeah. Super, super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I started out, I actually, from the moment I had it, I started working.
Yeah. Same.
Went into Home Depot. I was cashier. Yeah. And I remember I was about to be the head cashier at Home Depot. And I turned 21, and uh-huh. When I turned 21, I had like this like moment of awakening, mm-hmm. like my 21st birthday. I just kind of like explored my mind, mm-hmm. explored myself, and I realized kind of what I wanted to do from my life. Like, I was like, well, you know, I think I tapped into like where I was as a kid. Here's a story. As a kid, I used to build these soccer tournaments for all the kids in the apartments. And so I would like gather all the kids and we would make like 24 teams of three, mm-hmm. and we would do soccer tournaments, and the winner would win like different things like Yu-Gi-Oh cards, you know, like video games, just things that we'd be interested in. But
yeah.
I would like organize like these whole sheets of tournaments, and I was like the commissioner of the leagues, you know? So I kept telling myself like, oh man, like I think I can be the commissioner of the MLS. You know, I kept telling myself that.
Yeah.
And so I was going to U of H at the time as a sophomore. And this was before working at the Dynamo. But I would always purposely take, for anyone that knows Houston, the loop around to 59 into downtown and drive by the stadium. And every time I drove by the stadium, Dana, I would always picture myself. I would say to myself, like, one day I'm going to work there.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but one day I'm going to work there. And I just took all these, like it's kind of interesting whenever you have like this goal in mind, doors open for you,
mm-hmm.
that normally would be closed. It's like almost like the universe gets out of your way.
Yeah.
And I took leadership role in the soccer club, and you know, now, I mean, we can dive deeper into that, but like now I work for the naming rights, mm-hmm. partner of the stadium, and I get to walk in there, and full respect to the Dynamo leadership, because
yeah.
I know all of them. I walk in there like I own the place, you
yeah.
know? And it's fun. And my name tag, instead of saying, like, you know, employee, salesperson, marketer for mm-hmm. the Dynamo, it says partner. You know? And it just feels kind of like full circle, you know? As when you, from that point when I realized, I took advantage of that DACA sense of gratitude
yeah.
to do something great, you know?
And this is what I think that, you know, I'm 100%, you know, I feel like every single person who has DACA, you know, they try to strive for the best.
That's right.
Because it's like, you know, we're given this is an opportunity that, you know, we can't, like, we have to either go big or go home.
You know what? I think on that note, it would be great to make our case with
mm-hmm.
facts. And
yeah.
people are going to see us. So for everyone listening, you're going to see us market these facts a lot
mm-hmm.
in a lot of different ways. But on the note of what Dana just said, you know, our sense of gratitude and how hard we work, numerically, it's created $5.7 billion in federal taxes
mm.
since DACA, $3.1 billion in state and local taxes. And collectively, all DACAs in the U.S., have a spending power of $24.7 billion. So that just speaks to it. Like, we as a community of recipients, we all have this unique purpose, and it's so close to what I believe the definition of the American dream is.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, we contribute a lot to this country a lot. And I remember Obama saying this, like, it's not fair for these kids who have contributed so much to this country to not be able to do the same thing that others are doing because of a paper that doesn't allow them to do something. And, you know, I think that was like, if you remember, like, I will always remember him saying that, like, we can't define their, you know, their talent by a paper that has a number on it, you know, like they contribute so much. And I think, you know, especially like now, you know, during these times where, you know, that guy's, you know, it's still going as of now, but at any moment between now to the end of this month, the Supreme Court is looking to make a decision into either canceling it or keep going with it. Yep. And, you know, this is one of the reasons I feel like why we're definitely sharing our stories, because it's, you know, we're not, I mean, I'm very thankful that I'm in the position where I don't, like, I'm a resident now and I don't have to have that fear of saying, like, is it going to be canceled? But I know exactly of that fear because I've experienced it many times before.
Yeah, of course.
I was in the same spot where it's like, you know, this has been a subject that has been going on for way too long. You know, they always say, oh, we're going to cancel it. We're not going to, you know, we won't continue DACA unless if they build the wall. So, you know, this is not the life of Dana and Ugo. This is the life of hundreds and thousands of kids who are in the same position as we are in right now. Yeah. So, you know, we're sharing our stories to, you know, bring more awareness, because at any moment, this thing could be potentially canceled forever. And it can affect not only the lives of the people who are doing it, but it's going to affect America and the economy, because by the facts you just read, I mean, how much do we make it? Like
billions,
like, billions in many facets. We contribute facets. Billions. So, I mean, I hope that, you know, the government and the president, you know, realize that, you know, we're not just kids who came here.
Yeah.
You know, we're, you know, kids who are contributing and will still continue to contribute no matter what.
Yeah. We're not just a political bargaining chip.
Yes. And I hate that. I hate that they keep, you know, it messes with everyone's, you know, feelings. And
yeah,
it's, I don't think anyone really understands the feeling of this until they're actually in the shoes that we currently are, or the shoes that we've been in. Because, you know, it's like, you never know, like, am I going to be able to go to work tomorrow?
Exactly.
Like, how long am I going to be able to have a driver's license? I mean, if it wasn't for, like, me getting my, you know, my residency, my DACA would have expired this year, August of 2020. If you think about it, I just graduated in May.
Yeah.
My huge fear, like, I was thinking about this when I got my DACA renewed 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, dang, my expiration date is August 2020, and I was projecting to graduate May 2020. So I was like, so if I graduate in May 2020, let's say I get a full-time offer, and then next thing you know, they canceled DACA, I would only, like, have, what, 4 months in that job, and then I would have to leave because of they canceled DACA. I'm like, how is that fair? I mean, I worked so hard to get to this place, and then to have it all taken away in just, like, a second, I'm like, that's not fair. So yeah. I remember having to worry about that. And, you know, and there's so many people that are, you know, worrying, like, am I going to have a job? Like, what if, like, I already graduated. What if, like, I can't work anymore, you know?
For sure. And we're only 8 years in. So, yeah. So what we talked about, like, this sense of gratitude, this drive that we all share, it's going to create some great leaders. Like, I think when we look at this podcast and our community, like, in 10 years from now, at the 20-year anniversary mark, we're going to be seeing presidents of companies. We're going to be seeing political leaders. We're going to be seeing people that are contributing in a major way, you know? And, I mean, it's just kind of fascinating. It's going to be fascinating to see more and more what DACA recipients are, you know, have done and will do. So I guess on that note, what do you want to do with your life? Miss Graduate of the number one entrepreneurship program?
I mean, I've learned a lot, you know, before coming, you know, before I even joined this entrepreneurship program. You know, I had worked in corporate America and I was like, you know what? Corporate America isn't as bad as everyone says it is. Mm. It's a stable job. You work 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. You get the weekends off. Mm. I was like, it's not that bad. But after, you know, joining this entrepreneurship program, I learned that, you know, I have so many crazy ideas and so many things that I want to conquer. And I'm like, I can't just leave all those ideas and dreams at a 8 to 5 Monday through Friday job. I'm like, I have no hate towards corporate America. You know, if you like good do corporate America, you know, I'm not hating against it, but you know, I definitely think that for me, I feel like I have so much more than that. And yeah. You know, my plan is to, you know, contribute to this country, continue to contribute to this country, and to also help my country out.
Great.
Because at the end of the day, like, I am proud of where I come from. And, you know, one of my dreams has always, you know, I've always been into fashion. I love clothing. I love, you know, dressing up, and I love shopping. And so, you know, I wanted to open up my own, you know, boutique, and I saw the opportunity. And, you know, I'm happy to say that I'm now a business owner. I've, you know, officially launched my business. It doesn't officially launch until the fall. I'm still getting stuff ready, but, you know, it's up in the works. I'm getting everything ready for it. And, you know, my goal is to, you know, I'm going to be selling 100% Colombian clothes, you know, introducing Colombian fashion here in the States. And then at the same time, I'm providing more jobs in my country, which is helping people down there. And then I'm also introducing a little bit of my culture and contributing to the, you know, economy here in the United States.
Beautiful.
So I'm living both my best of both worlds.
On that note, this show is brought to you by Calidana.
Oh, yes. Calidana.
Clothing with Calidad.
Yes, that's the name of my boutique, Calidana.
That's beautiful. Wow. I guess if I were to put it in words, you know, for me, like, I've always tried to define success not about money or like material accomplishments. Agreed. I want to find the balance between mind, body, and soul, you know? But with that balance, you can do great things.
Yeah.
And actually, I do have an announcement. Like, as of 3 weeks or about a month ago, I won 3 prestigious marketing awards for a campaign. Ooh. I did. So it's so great. Now I can say, you know, I'm an award-winning marketer.
Yep.
That's great.
Put that on your LinkedIn page.
Oh, yeah. We're going to blast it for this podcast. But I don't know what the future will hold. I want to help my family. I want to retire my parents.
Definitely. Same.
I'll be audacious. You know, if I can be the first DACA billionaire, great. Let's go for it.
It's a competition.
Yeah, we'll see who's first. Yeah. Well, that's great, Dana. You know, I think that's a good place to cut it, you know, for the first episode. And I'm excited for this adventure with you. Thank you for joining me. It's going
to
be awesome.
I'm so happy to be part of this. And, you know, this is kind of like an introduction of, you know, my story, your story, you know, to let people know that you are not the only ones going through, you know. Sometimes most of us are all scared to share our stories, and, you know, we think we're going to get judged, or, you know, we're scared. You know, we live in a, you know, world now where it's okay to, you know, be proud of where you're from, you know, share your story, because there's millions of us that are going through the exact same thing.
That's right.
So it's important for us to go through, and, you know, as we go through this journey, we would love to, you know, hear your stories. And, you know, we're going to be interviewing, you know, DACA recipients, people who have, you know, been through the same process as we have and who are now USA residents or USA citizens.
Yep.
You know, I think at the end of the day, we're all coming together I think we can all agree that we love this country so much. And that's the reason why we're here. And that's
absolutely
the reason why we haven't left.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Cheers to that.
Yes.